Okay, so what an exciting set of ideas. I've got some notes I made that I mixed up. Start with the European perspective on this, because we've got when we're thinking about these things, we must take care not to have a narrow perspective from representing our local experience. So the nearest example we have is our wonderful European Union, which has many commissioners, many directorates who tell us how things should be. And there is a commissioner and a directorate concerned with the information society, specifically, as it's in the title. And that unit talks about related perspectives, very often, such as the network society in the sense of Manuel Castells. It rarely talks explicitly about some of the issues that are coming up here. So the issues we might associate with are offer some conjunctions. A data society, there's not such a thing explicitly. That there's not a classified society in the sense that we were just hearing. That there's not a sense-making society, a commissioner responsible for that. You have to read it into the job descriptions and the actions. There's not an enlightened society. There's not a wisdom society. There's not a smart society. There's not a risk-aware society trying to bring together the elements from different presentations. There's certainly not a society that can cope with a banking crisis in the sense of a black swan event, a rare event. There's not a vigilant society. There's not a low contagion society, picking up these different elements of what we were hearing. There's certainly not an insightful society. No one owns that. The kind of insights that we're talking about here that are possible when we bring together people from different disciplines. So what would commissioners who talk to each other, what would they have to say? That they might look at critical issues in communities, they might look at critical issues in belief groups, they might look at the nature of the different social constructs that each commissioner brings and their office. Their experts that they bring in from places like this, they would have some way of explicitly locating the policy ownership in these different areas. And there isn't a joined-up policy in any sense, nor is there, as far as I can see, in the UK system. That these are different responsibilities. Partitioning tends to mean it was somebody else's fault if something goes wrong. Success has 1,000 fathers, they say. So we don't have a kind of self-improving society based upon information. We don't have a self-regulated learning society. Now, all of these things are quite possible. They're consequences of the kind of things that we heard this morning. And they would benefit from the kinds of distinctions that we just heard about von Baer, the information and the information. Now, these are not arbitrary and just academic. These things have consequences. Being able to think powerfully in the sense that we've heard in these different presentations really would make a difference, and make a difference to the incidence or the likelihood of incidence of things like rioting and more positive things. But if we take... I did mentally some juxtapositions of the ideas I was hearing. So Hugh Mackay and Frank Land, for instance, I was looking at these and thinking, it's a really interesting idea, the emergence of the counter-knowledge, the unknowledge that rivals official knowledge and its prevalence and its influence. And suppose Open University went in that direction. How many more students could we get if we had an Open University of crime? And how could we avoid pre-selecting, so you wouldn't want just criminals, you know, to introduce unnecessary barriers to coming to the Open University of Crime. You wouldn't want people only able to take those courses if they'd gone to prison. So you'd want this to be open to everyone, right? So at what points, so everyone who wants to be a potential car thief or a financial entrepreneur or whatever you would call it, they would want to know how I take course crime 001, forensic accounting, how to avoid it, and various other things. But you see, it's a parody. But the way in which society could go depends upon the extent to which you pay attention to any one of these particular disciplines. The idea of a global brain. My God. I mean, this is, for me, raises questions of what our information future could possibly look like. Is it going to be an information heaven, overseen by some benign global brain, as we were hearing? Was it going to be Jeremy Bentham in the 21st century? So it's an information hell. Jeremy Bentham, the University College, had this panopticon idea where you could be seen from anywhere by the guards, by the jailers, by the managers. So it's an information hell with no secrets and no privacy and no scope for non-conformists. Such an irony, given the nature of what Jeremy Bentham was. So the panopticon kind of vision of information seems to me to be to follow logically from some of the things that we heard. Then I was hearing about ethical judgments. Very complicated. How do we make ethical judgments that we don't come to regret? So often, it's a simple kind of regret theory for purchasing consumer decisions applies. You want to know whether or not you bought the right dishwasher or something. And there's a whole set of theories about how you measure that and how you influence that so you end up happy, whatever. But it applies just as much to society at large. And hearing the sociological perspectives, how do we avoid the emergence of powerful groups? And if you're paranoid, you can think of many of these groups, supposed groups, who have privileged access to information and who prevent the rest of us from being informed. So how do we avoid the differential privileging of information? This was a very interesting kind of issue that I heard. And the owners of that information, how can they manage our filter bubbles, as we've heard? How do we avoid unchallenged and misleading propaganda about information? How do we avoid encountering risky new versions, brand 2011 versions of Ernst Cassirer's Myth of the State or even Plato's version of Myth of the State? So we're told stuff in school. Is it right? Should we believe it? From what I'm hearing this morning, no. We should be properly cautious in some of the ways in which we interpret the information. Robin Smith, I thought, raised a really important question. This whole idea of who knew, of going back. It was in the context of the banking crisis or Scott Fitzgerald or whatever. But if you look at the effort that is put into obscuring who knew in many different contexts, who wants to be associated with the old paradigm? No, I wasn't there, not on my watch. That's the kind of, unless we have total documentation of what's going on, and this again, for me, was interesting with the Mackay versus the Webster perspectives. The thesis about how information is transforming so many aspects of our society, I buy all of this, what I was hearing. It's the conjunction, it's the combination that seems to me to be truly powerful. I'm just scratching the surface. I'm just amateur in these areas. But I see this notion of prosumers, of user producers, as well as user consumers, as being something that was opened up, whether it's to do with issues of race or other things. We need to be properly professional in some of these areas. We need to bring people in from other disciplines. Nigel Thrift, I talked with Nigel Thrift recently. We met in a context that doesn't matter, but we were talking about informational capitalism. Very interesting when you look at the charge for analytics, that there are other ways of patterning and analysing social spaces. I'm hoping that the panel will have comments on that, because it seems to me that our policymakers are largely oblivious to what was being talked about. And therefore, if they're oblivious also to the consequences and to the implications of these various things. The establishment areas, I heard a few times about BBC and similar, and these are establishment elements. And so there's what I was hearing was not just information, but the absence of information, the absence of participation. Like earlier today, we were discussing the riots that were triggered perhaps in part by the signals of non-participation, of non-presence by the police. It sort of legitimated certain kinds of action. And nearly done in my notes on this, that the sentiment analysis that we heard about for different media channels, for BBC World Service, for whatever, for as I heard it, may have been wrong, this notion of particular presenters or programs or commercial brands to show what purports to be, what people are talking about, what they're saying about, maybe to allow actions to be justified. All of this seems to me to be highly problematic, needs to be problematized. And we're just letting stuff happen. I don't mean at the level of citizen journalists. By all means, we should empower citizen journalists. But it's what we're being told to interpret this as, whether we can trust this or whatever. Crowd-based innovation seems to me to be, it came up in the context of Lego, a very powerful kind of social trend. When I look at the kind of combination of these, that the e-science and the e-humanities, how do you professionalise our use of the information there? Is it like YouTube? Is it like we were hearing yesterday, where you can take public information and you can come up with really neat reperceptions of this? I do hope so, but the general theory of everything institutes seems to me to be really very, very challenging. Where would you begin? And it's not to say that it shouldn't happen, but the information risk, my closing sentence, the information risk here seems to me to be something we should attend to and attempt to quantify and bring in as many insights as we can from as many groups, faith groups and other national groups and so on. No, none of us is as wise as all of us. That's what I heard.